Blog Talk Radio.
He is the last of his kind. All that remains of a once powerful nation. Some think he is a myth. Some believe he is the chosen one, who will bring balance to a world at war. And some will stop at nothing to destroy him.
Welcome, 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 everybody, to Morris Talk Live 100. I'm your host, Tahaka Amana Elbay, and tonight, my special guest will be Dr. Walter Williams. The title of the broadcast will be History of the Moors in Spain, the Vatican, and America. We're going to be talking about all that tonight. We'll be dealing with some of the following questions. What is the ancient story of the Moors in America? What's that all about? What is the ancient story of the Moors in America? Did the Moors have control of the Mediterranean and Atlantic Ocean at one time in history? Why don't we know about that? Why is that not being broadcast? Why is it not in the history books? Why is there an entire species of people removed from the respectable commentary of his story? His story. Why are the Moors not mentioned in America's history books? Why not? Who are the Moors in America exactly? Who are these people? We got a lot of people over here. African Americans. We got Negroes. We got colored. We got black. Where are the Moors? Where are the Egyptians? Did they just vanish? Did they just walk off the face of the earth? Where at? Why won't the media and the U.S. government corporation broadcast the truth about the Moorish Empire? Were there Moors murdered and lynched in the south or the southern parts of the United States? Who are these people they were murdering and lynching and castrating and burning and raping and pillaging? Who were these people that they were doing this to? Well, these questions and much, much more we're going to deal with tonight. And it's a good idea if you get your paper and pencil handy so that you can take notes later on in the broadcast. We will be opening up the phone lines so you can dial in if you got a question or comment for our guests. And the number to dial in is 319-527-6084. And you'll be able to press 1 on your phone. That'll give me an indication that you got something to say. Now, that's later on in the broadcast. Keep in mind that on the 29th of August, Dr. Williams and I will be back on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be doing another episode on what we have to say about our ancient culture and the Moors and Egyptians and stuff. So make sure you mark your calendar on that. That's August the 29th. Dr. Williams and I will be back on the broadcast again. Okay? Also, now, y'all know I deal with contract law, and I assist people all over the United States. You're dealing with student loans, child support, mortgages, foreclosures, the whole nine. I want to let you know that they've already did a little backup on the rent thing where the people are getting a little bit more retrieved. But after a while, all this stuff going in. And we got the word that by the end of January, moving toward the end of January, the student loan thing gonna end. Okay? So now, just think for a minute. Now's the time for you to get a head start on getting rid of it. Go to www.targetdebtelimination.org or call me directly. My number is right there on the website so you get a head start. Don't wait till the last minute talking about doing nothing. Child support, student loans, foreclosures, mortgages. Now's the time to take action. Right now. Don't wait till the last minute. Okay? All right, we're going to our commercial break, and we'll be right back. So y'all hold on a minute, and I'll make sure that I give you plenty of time to get your paper and pencil handy for this broadcast. So when my guests get in here, we'll be ready to rock and roll. Okay, so y'all hold on a moment. We'll be right back.
Everybody, this is Talker again. I would like to introduce you to The Great Debate. We now have copies of The Great Debate, Dr. Walter Williams Debates, Prince Ezio Ben Israel of the Hebrew Israelites. Also, Reverend Henry Hardy of one of the most prominent churches in Chicago, Illinois. Chester Blair, a major attorney in Chicago. And Munir Muhammad of the Nation of Islam. The whole thing is hosted by W.L. Lillard. Dr. Walter Williams debate these men on their belief versus what he knows for a fact and he can prove. Get your copy by going to www.TahakaDebtElimination.org. That's TahakaDebtElimination.org, or you can go to NewDebtElimination.com. NewDebtElimination.com. Contact me for your copies. Okay? The Great Debate. You got any questions, just give me a shout. Peace.
Okay, let me make a quick announcement. NewDebtElimination.com has been shut down. It served us well. A lot of people benefited from that, but we closed that down. We're over at TalkingDebtElimination.org, okay? My number's right there. Before you do anything, call me on the phone. I'll answer the phone. If I don't answer right away, I will call you back. I'm proud to announce that this year we have a good season with us growing our plants and stuff. I posted quite a few photographs about that. We're dealing with the cantaloupes now, and then we'll come back after the freeze, the winter months, and then we'll go directly into the peaches and plums and stuff like that. But right now, we got your peppers, we got your cantaloupe, and we got what, your grapefruit trees, tangerines, oranges, all that's going. And it's going very, very good. And I just want to put that information out there for you. I got some photographs up there on Facebook. If you're friends on Facebook, just go over there to my wall, and you'll see the plants and stuff that we grow. Quite a few people got plants and stuff. We was able to grow them in pots and give them away. And so we made quite a bit of progress thanks to you guys' assistance and stuff with your donations and stuff. We're able to keep our promises to the general public and make sure that they're able to grow their own food as well. Okay? All right. Hold on a minute. We'll be right back.
For Tahaka's free report, go to TahakaDebtElimination.org. Put in your email address, and he will rush your free report to your email box. Learn about what's going on in America. Learn about big tobacco and what's in it for you. Go to www.TahakaDebtElimination.org. I'm Chantel. Thanks.
Okay, we're back. It appears that my guest is in the queue. I'm going to open up the phone lines, and respectively, with all the new people here, the switchboard is lit up. He could give us a little bit more detailed description about this great debate thing. It's fantastic. It's amazing. I look at it over and over and over and over again. But anyway, let me open up the phone line. Air code 773, Dr. Walter Williams, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here, Brother Tahaka. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. You're coming across loud and clear. Fantastic, my brother. Fantastic. We got a full house here this evening. I also want to let everyone know that the chat room is open, so please be respectful toward one another. And we're not going to be feeding into any junk this evening. You know, we're going to bypass that because the subject that we're dealing with here tonight is very, very important. And so, Dr. Williams, before we get started with the main meat and potatoes of what we're going to discuss this evening, could you bring the new people up to speed about this great debate thing? You have the floor.
Okay, well, the great debate is a, I call it a historical tape because it was taped 28 years ago in Chicago, Illinois, where I, Walter Williams, was set up to debate five men of various religious persuasion. The first one was Prince Asael Ben Israel of the Black Hebrew Israelite group. The second one was Henry Hardy, the Reverend Henry Hardy, who has a big church here in Chicago, Illinois. I debated him on Christianity. And there was a young man there named Munir Muhammad, who represented the Nation of Islam. And then there's the lawyer by the name of Chester L. Blair. I debated him because I was saying at the time that, and I still say that Africans born in the United States of America are not citizens of the United States of America due to the Constitution drawn up in 1787. So he, as a lawyer who took the oath to defend the Constitution, he had to try and defend it against me and the statement that I made against the Constitution. And then the host, W.L. Lillard, he was the fifth one because W.L. Lillard at the time wanted me to be defeated by any means necessary, meaning that back then I had just published my book. That was the year 1993. And my first book that I published was The Historical Origin of Christianity. And I was coming out saying in the African community, in Chicago and all over America and throughout the Caribbean, that there's never been a man that ever walked the earth in human form of any race, creed, or color by the name of Jesus Christ. So they had to try to silence me from saying that because everybody is bleeding up to that point, and they still do, some people, that there was a character, a non-human, by the name of Jesus Christ walking this earth as a human being. So he set that up for my defeat, and it didn't work out so well for him. So the great debate is a historical tape. Like you said, Brother Tucker, you look at it over and over again, and you always enjoy looking at it as well as I look at it over and over again, and I enjoy looking at it. So that is the Great Debate tape. And if you want some rare information and some new information, I advise anybody in the listening audience to get that tape. And you can get it through Brother Tahaka. Just contact him, and he'll make your tape available for you. Brother Tahaka.
Okay, Dr. Williams, fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to get your copy of the Great Debate, just contact me by phone or by email. You have my phone number. It's right there at talkaditelimination.org. Most of you all already know my phone number. But anyway, if you want a copy of that, we'll send you the direct link. All you got to do is click on it. You don't have to download anything. And you right there watching the whole thing from start to finish. Fantastic. Okay. Dr. Williams, today a friend and I, we got together. We started early this morning after I watered all the plants outside and everything. And we started dealing with the Moors / ancient Egyptians in the Americas. And I wanted to show her because I have been telling her over and over. She said, I hear you say it all the time. I said, well, I'm going to show you where I got this information from. And she's able to watch this footage. And we didn't get a chance to cover everything. We didn't get down in the Grand Canyon, stuff like that. But we were off the coast of Bimini, off the coast of Florida. 46 miles off the coast of Florida, where she was able to see, and the Europeans is actually showing you is right there. But anyway, I'm going to yield the floor to you, and you can start with this broadcast where you see fit.
Okay, well, today's lecture and narrative is about the Moors of Spain, the Vatican, and America. And we're going to find out who are the Moors. It's very important because we have a lot of brothers and sisters in America who are following the Moorish teaching of Noble Drew Ali. And so a lot of them do not know where that name came from, or they know where it came from, but they don't know who it was applied to. So tonight we're going to reveal all that to the listening audience. So let me start my narrative by saying this. I'm going to bring forth our ancestors, the ancient Egyptians, those Africans, who brought forth civilization for all of humanity, coming from the continent of Africa, coming from a country called Egypt. That is where civilization began, with an African people known to us today as the ancient Egyptians. So, and as we go along, you will see how all this fits in and ties back to the ancient Egyptians. The ancient Egyptians were the world's first and oldest civilized people. They were the first literate people on earth simply because they created an alphabet to make themselves literate. And they taught that alphabet throughout their culture. In other words, they kept that alphabet, and whoever they came in contact with, they learned the language of that individual or that group of individuals, and they applied an alphabet to the language by way of phonetics, meaning that however that language sound, they applied an alphabet to it, simply because they were the world's first and oldest literate and world's first and oldest civilized people. So they were able to do that. So, and that's where we're going to start our narration. They, as I mentioned before, lived in the continent of Africa. And they, by way of their culture, produced the world's first and oldest civilization ever existing on planet Earth. Now, these ancient Egyptian people are still with us because we, Africans born in the United States of America, are the direct descendants of those great, grand, and glorious civilized people, those Africans that lived in the continent of Africa, in the country called Egypt, and through their culture came civilization. So remember this. The ancient Egyptians are the ancestors of the American Negro. Let me repeat that again. The ancient Egyptians are the ancestors of the American Negro. Okay? So now, let's get started and move another step forward. And we're going to move into the year 1091. 1091 is when the uncivilized rulers of Spain ask the ancient Egyptians to bring forth into their country a civilization, or bring civilization to them. Now, let me run this by you. The ancient Egyptians lived in North Africa along the Mediterranean. They lived in the country that we know today as Egypt. They lived in Libya, Tunisia, Algeria, Morocco, and Mauritania. Those six countries all border the Mediterranean. And the ancient Egyptians coming out of Egypt lived all along those bordering countries that I just mentioned. So when they were asked by the uncivilized Spanish rulers of Spain to come into Spain to bring civilization to them, the ancient Egyptians used a country called Morocco. Why Morocco? Because among all other five other countries, Morocco has the shortest route to enter Spain because of the Strait of Gibraltar. The Strait of Gibraltar is attached to Morocco. And once you leave and use Morocco and the Strait of Gibraltar, you have to take a boat and travel 8.9 miles before you get to the shores of Spain. So that is very important for you to know, that Morocco was the launching country because of the Strait of Gibraltar, which gives an individual a shorter distance to reach the shores of Spain. Again, you have to take a boat and travel 8.9 miles and you're in at the shores line of Spain at that time. Now, once the ancient Egyptians got into Spain to bring civilization to the uncivilized Spanish-speaking people, the Spanish-speaking people began to call them Black Moors. See? Why? Because they came out of the country called Morocco. Black Moroccans. Black Moors. Now, I want to bring this to your attention. When that was done, the name Black Moors was a nickname. See, the name Moor is only a nickname given to our ancestors, the ancient Egyptians, by the Spanish-speaking people. Now, black in Spanish is synonymous with Negro. Negro and black is one and the same. No difference. So when they call our ancestors, the ancient Egyptians, Black Moors, they call them Negro Moors also. Again, Moor, the name Moor, is only a nickname. Where did it come from? It came from the Spanish who called our ancient Egyptian ancestors Black Moors, Black Moroccans, Black Moors. So that's where that came from. Now, once in Spain, our ancestors, the ancient Egyptians, learned the Spanish language. And by them being a literate people, they applied an alphabet to the Spanish language. They had to learn the Spanish language in order to communicate with the Spanish people of Spain. So they learned that language, and they applied an alphabet to that language. Therefore, once they applied an alphabet to that language, they made that language to be literate. In other words, you can take that language and with the alphabet applied to it, and you can begin to write, spell, and read that language because of our ancestors applying an alphabet to the Spanish language. Now, the second thing they did was that they set up a government for Spain, showed them how to set up a government for themselves. The third thing that they did was that they began to build throughout Spain buildings and building cities, city blocks. You can find what they built if you go to Granada, Seville, Toledo, Catholic both cities in Spain. And you can see the evidence of that. They left their trace right there in Spain. And the fourth thing that they did is very important. They introduced bathhouses to Spain, public bathhouses. And the most important thing, along with introducing the bathhouse to them, they introduced soap. Sometimes if you listen to the History Channel, the narrator on the History Channel will tell you, said, the Europeans did not use soap or was introduced to soap until the 12th century. And that's true. But they never tell you who introduced that soap to Europe. It was the Moors who did that in Spain by way of introducing them to private bathhouses. See? So they began to build Spain, and they began to make their language literate by way of applying an alphabet to that language, and introduced them and created a government and set up this government for them to show them how to run a country and how to be a people with some type of government that runs, that can run the country. Now, let me take you to the second stop of the Moors. Now, as I mentioned earlier, I hope you got the full understanding about how the Moors came about, who the Moors are, the ancient Egyptian and the Moor, and the Moors are one and the same, no different, okay? And the ancient Egyptians, like I mentioned before, are the ancestors of the American Negro. All these things you have to take into consideration so you can understand what I'm talking about in my narration going forward tonight. Now, let me take you to the second stop, and we're going to get you into the Vatican. Now, we're going to take you into the Council of Ephesus in Ephesus, Turkey, Northeast Africa. Northeast Africa today is called the Middle East. Okay? That's a political name to try to hide the fact that all of these council meetings took place in Northeast Africa. And that's where this Christ, this non-human created creature called Christ was created, and this non-human created creature called the Virgin Mary was created. Okay? Right there at Ephesus in 431. So now, this was done by our ancestors, the Melkite Coptic Egyptians, who ran the government of ancient Egypt, who was under threat and terrorization coming from the Greeks and the Romans to try to make them, the European, into a god. So trying to appease them, a long story short, I'm going to cut through the chase, and I'm going to bring forth Serapis. Serapis is known today as Jesus the Christ. Serapis was brought in to the conversation and the controversy at Ephesus in 431. The Monophysite said that the Serapis had no human nature, but had an Osiris-like spirit, but no human nature. In order to have a human nature, one has to be born through the body of a female. And if you're not born through the body of a female, you cannot be a human being. So what they did was to create a mother for the Serapis by taking the attributes and creating a created creature by the name of the Virgin Mary and giving this Virgin Mary the attributes of Isis in order for this Serapis to have a human nature. So what's the Melchizedek copy of the Egyptian doing? Trying to appease the European. This is for the European now, because our ancestors, the ancient Egyptians, they didn't need no deities. They had all the deities in their culture from the very beginning of civilization. But anyway, what they did was to amalgamate the two created creatures together. They took the created creature, non-human created creature, the Virgin Mary, and the non-human created creature, Serapis, and they amalgamated those two created creatures together. And once the amalgamation was created, the Melkite Coptic Egyptian, speaking Greek, said of this amalgamation, now this is the Christos. And in English, the Christos means now this is the Christ. So a long story short, this is how this Christ was created there at Ephesus in 431. Now, let's fast forward that. 101 years later came the creation of the world's first Christian church on planet Earth. And that world's first Christian church is known as the Church of Hagia Sophia. Now, this is caused to be built by Justinian and his wife, who were the Roman emperor at that time, who called to the ancient Egyptian community, called for African ancient Egyptian architects and African ancient Egyptian builders to build a church for Mary and Christ. So the ancient Egyptian builders and architects, they designed the world's first and built the world's first Christian church called the Church of Hagia Sophia. Now, this is done in 532. On December the 27th, 5 years later, 537, they finished that church. That church was dedicated to Mary and Christ, the Church of Hagia Sophia. That was the name of it. Now, my book, The Historical Origin of Islam, has a picture on the very front cover of my book, The Historical Origin of Islam. And you can see how that church looked. That church, the structure of that church is still standing as I speak in Constantinople, Turkey. Today, Constantinople, Turkey is called Istanbul, Turkey. It's standing right there today. And at that time when that church was built, it was dedicated, like I said, to Mary and Christ, finished December 27, 537. So now, that was the very first seat of Christianity. Now, that lasted, that seat lasted over there until the Byzantine emperors had an imminent threat coming from the Ottoman Turks. The Ottoman Turks was threatening and usurping all of the land territories occupied by the Byzantine emperors. The Ottoman Turks came to power in the year 1300, you see, and by usurping all that land that once was held by the Roman emperors, that made them centrally located themselves in a double-walled city called Constantinople, the capital of the Roman emperors over in Northeast Africa. And outside of that wall, Christianity was not practiced, only inside. that wall, where the seat, the first seat of Christianity, was established. Now, we're going to move a little further up in history. That church stayed in place without being interrupted for 902 years until John the Eighth in 1439, knowing that it was an imminent threat that the double walled city of Constantinople could be seized by the Ottoman Turks, who had the power and who had the authority to do just that. So John the Eighth, thought it would be best to move that seat out of Northeast Africa into Europe. So in 1439, John the Eighth went to Florence, Italy, and Ferrara, Italy, and he relinquished what is known as the donation of Constantine in order for that seat of Christianity to be moved out of Northeast Africa, out of the double walled city of Constantinople. Now, mind you, that was the European Renaissance era was in just started up. It was only 43 years into the European Renaissance era of Europe. So therefore, when that seat was moved by way of John the Eighth, 1439, by way of the donation of Constantine, there were six humanist scholars, supposedly, and six from Florence, Italy, the Curia, there the word Curia means college. C-U-R-I-A means college. And then we had six humanists from Ferrara. Now, a humanist back then would be called an intellectual today. See? So now you had 12 men to receive the seat of Christianity to be located in Europe. Now, these six humanists went into Rome and asked the Roman authorities to allot them land so they could build the second church and the second seat of Christianity. The Roman authorities allotted them land in the suburbs of Rome, on the outskirts of Rome, near the catacombs. So, with that designated land area, these 12 men who was the receiver of Christianity, the seat of Christianity, the second seat of Christianity, called to Spain. Listen to this now. They called to Spain for the Moors to come in and build them a church. They called to Spain for the Moors to come into Spain. So the Moors came in 1444. They came in at their request from these 12 humanists, and they surveyed the land area that was designated to these 12 humanists to build the second seat of Christianity. So what they did, these Moors, they replicated the double walled city of Constantinople in Northeast Africa. They replicated that city where the first seat was being held. They replicated and they built the next year as a surveying in 1444. The land area where they was going to set up the second seed of Christianity. So they, the next year, in 1444, they broke ground and they began to build what is known as St. Peter's Church, known today as St. Peter's Basilica. You see, and if you look at St. Peter's Basilica today and look at the dome on the very first church was built in Africa, Northeast Africa, you see that the two domes are similar. Now, the one in Rome is a little smaller dome than the one in Africa, in Northeast Africa, in Constantinople. But anyway, it's just the same people built the first Christian church are now building the second Christian church, St. Peter's Basilica, or St. Peter's Church, or the Church of St. Peter. Now, they laid out what we know today as the Vatican, and it replicated the double-walled city of Constantinople. So they, today, as I speak, the Vatican is a double-walled city, you see? And that was built by the Moors, who were asked to come into on the outskirts of Rome and build the second seat of Christianity for them. In 1473, these same Moors built the Sistine Chapel that you see over there today. And that Sistine Chapel is the where the popes live, et cetera, et cetera. And they have a lot of artists' work that is inside of that Sistine Chapel, such as Michelangelo's piece of art is over there in that area, Leonardo da Vinci's, et cetera, et cetera. So they began to build at the request, again, of these 12 humanists. And they built it as a, and replicated the first seat of Christianity in Northeast Africa. I'm repeating this because I want you to really get a full understanding of what I'm talking about. Now, here's the big problem came up in 1478 under the leadership of Ferdinand and Isabella. The Roman Catholic Church had allied with Spain. The Roman Catholic Church, I'm going to repeat that, had allied with Spain. So now, Ferdinand and Isabella came on the scene, and they made up in their mind that it was time to get rid of the Moors out of Spain and the Vatican. In other words, they want to erase any evidence of the Moors being there. So they set up in 1478 what is known as the Spanish Inquisition. And they hired a inquisitor by the name of Thomas D. Torquemada, who set up that inquisition for the country of Spain and for the Roman Catholic Church. So it's called the Spanish and Roman Inquisition. See? So now they set sights on getting rid of the Moors, erasing their history out and from the streets, cities, towns, et cetera, of the Moors. They didn't want no evidence of them ever being there. So the day, that's what you will find over there as I speak. But you have to know the history if you go over there, like I'm giving you the history, so you know what you're looking at. and what you're looking for. Okay? Now, let's go. I've taken care of Spain, the Moors in Spain. I've taken care of how the Moors got into the Vatican and what they did there. And I've taken you to Spanish Inquisition, Spanish and Roman Inquisition. And now they're getting rid of the Moors out of Spain. The Moors ran into, some of them went into France, some of them went into different parts of Europe. They came into, back into North Africa, into Morocco and other countries along the Mediterranean, including Egypt, et cetera, et cetera. They even went into Mali in Africa. And they set up in Mali. Now listen to this now. They set up what is known today as the University of Timbuktu. Now, it took me, I was looking for the University of Timbuktu for 29 years. I could not find any physical building of brick and mortar. I couldn't find no brick and mortar building that would represent a university like we know it today. But after 29 years of searching, I was in a supermarket one day, and I was in line checking my groceries out, and they had the magazine section was there as you check out. And I looked over the magazine section, and I saw a book says archaeology. And they, by me studying ancient history and religion, et cetera, I'm always interested in archaeology. So I went to the book, picked it up, and there it said on the cover of the book, "The Mystery of the college or of Timbuktu." It said "The Mystery of Timbuktu." So therefore, I was very interested. I got to purchase the book, took it home, and I began to open the pages up. And what I found out was the temple, I mean, the University of Timbuktu was those teaching manuals. When they, when the Inquisition came, getting rid of the Moors out of Spain, these, some of them fled into Mali, and they bought land in Mali, and they built homes in Mali, and they began to teach from their homes out of these manuscripts, hundreds of manuscripts for different subjects in these various manuscripts. So these manuscripts, that's the University of Timbuktu. You will not find no brick and mortar of a University of Timbuktu. But I found out that these manuscripts that was that they brought with them after the Spanish and Roman Inquisition was initiated by Ferdinand and Isabella to get rid of the Moors out of Spain, that they came over into Mali. They bought land, built homes, and they began to teach out of their homes from those manuscripts. Those manuscripts that they bought, those hundreds of different subjects in those manuscripts are the University of Timbuktu. So I thought I'd pass that along to you. Now, the next stop, we're coming into America. We're coming into America in 1492. When Ferdinand and Isabella hired a ship owner by the name of Christopher Columbus to take the Moors out of Spain and just take them away from Spain, get rid of them by any means necessary. And Christopher Columbus ended up over in this hemisphere that we know today as the Americas or the United States of America. Now, once over here, in 1492, by the Moors being a civilized people, they had set up the world's first and oldest civilization was set up by them in the continent of Africa in a country called Egypt. The second civilization set up by them was in Spain. That's the second seat of civilization. And then now they're over here in the United States of America, and they're about to set up the third seat of civilization here in America, which they did. In 1492, they began to build and bring civilization to this hemisphere. And so from 1492 to the advent and the coming of slavery in 1619, you got a period of 127 years. During that 127 years, the ancient Egyptians, under the name of Moor, began to build a civilization over in this hemisphere. See? Now, but the thing about it, no one talks about that. They talk about, they start the history of us Africans living in the United States of America with slavery, 1619. But none of them go beyond the wall of slavery to 1492, which you got from 1492 to 1619, like I mentioned, it's 127 years of unexplained history that our ancestors, the ancient Egyptians, a.k.a. the Moors, used that time to bring civilization to this hemisphere. So you have to understand that from 1492 until 1619, you got to understand that the civilization that was set up over here, that's still being used over here, was set up by the Moors, or by our ancestors, the ancient Egyptians, under the name of the Moors. You see? So now, you take, for instance, Benjamin Banneker was a Moor. John Hanson was a Moor. Benjamin Banneker laid out the city of Washington, D.C. See? So Washington, D.C. is nothing but, and this country itself, America, is nothing but a replica of ancient Egypt. Because you go into Washington, D.C., you see all those monuments that and statues and art and other artifacts, you see them being displayed there in Washington, D.C. Okay? That was put there by no accident, was put there on purpose to replicate America, was used to replicate ancient Egypt. So we have to know our history, because they're going to put everybody, or every African, in slavery over in this country, especially for the names that we call ourselves. If you call ourselves Negro, Black and Negro is synonymous. That name came from where? The Spanish, given that name to our ancient Egyptian ancestors. Then we call ourselves African Americans. But now when you try to find African Americans on the world map, you can't find no African Americans there. You find, go to the world map to find black land that identifies black people, you can't find it either. Nor can you find Negro land. So therefore, those names was given to us to cut our ancestors' history off and cut us off from our ancestors and from knowing our ancestors' history. That was done on purpose. So today, we're going to have to know the difference, and we're going to have to take it back. We're going to tell the world that we Africans born in the United States of America are the descendants of the ancient Egyptians, like I said before. the ancient Egyptians are the ancestors of the American Negro. So all you have to do is retro back using black and Negro back to where? Spain. That name, black and Negro, is synonymous, given to who? The ancient Egyptians, our ancestors. So that's where you retro back to find out who and where those names came from. So that is some of the narration that I want to bring to the listening audience tonight. And that's how we got into Spain, and that's how we got to be black and Negro, and that's how we got into the Vatican as the Moors, etc., etc., and that's how we got over in this hemisphere by way of Ferdinand and Isabella and the Spanish and Roman Inquisition. See? So now, with that being said, I'm going to turn this lecture back over to my dear brother, Tahaka. Tahaka?
All right, my brother, Dr. Williams. Fantastic, man. That was an excellent bringing us up to speed on the ancient story as well as his story, which is two different things. Fantastic delivery. I got to give it to you, my brother. I think that you laid it out well for us, and we can open up the phone lines now. We're an hour into the broadcast, and we're going to start with area code 312. Tell us who you are. 312, what's your question or comment for our guest? You're on the air.
Good afternoon. This is Brother Yoel. Just checking in a little
Welcome,
late
Brother
there.
Yoel. All right.
Thank you. Good afternoon to yourself and Professor Williams here.
Good afternoon, my brother.
Yes. I got a little bit of a question. You know, I've been dealing with when I first ran into the people, well, not really the first time I heard mention of the Moors, but the second time I had heard mention of the Moors was through some brothers I met in the restaurant here in Chicago. And these brothers were wearing their fezes and whatnot, and they were sitting in the restaurant eating. So I approached them, and I said, "What are y'all here for, something special or what? Y'all in an organization?" They said, we're here for the conference here in Chicago, and we're Moors, you know. Moors were the people who helped Columbus to navigate over here to America. And in my head, I'm thinking, oh, you the guys. Had they not done that, then they wouldn't have been able to haul anybody over here to America had y'all not taught them how to navigate over here then. That's what I was saying in my head, but I didn't say it to them. But the brother was boasting about this so bad. So sometimes I think, you know, at that time I'm thinking, well, what role did they play? Were these chill-out Negroes, what people call today, or what? Why did they do so much to help and aid the adversary in doing what he stepped in and do? And what is the treaty of friendship and fits into this, if you know anything about that, Professor Williams?
Dr. Williams, are you here? Okay, probably took a little break. Let me see if I can do you some justice on that. We'll start with the Treaty of Peace and Friendship. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If we just look back at the actual series of events that was occurring during the time that the so-called Treaty of Peace and Friendship was done up, we had the people that's writing the Constitution and all of these guys here, and all of these guys were slave owners. Right?
Uh-huh.
Now, we look at it, if we look at the time frame, so if you look at exactly what was going on during that time period, we know during that time period, the so-called people that were supposed to be signing this this document here and that document there, and the Constitution, the Articles of Confederation, all this stuff, these people were slave owners. As a matter of fact, during that time period, your prestige was built on how many slaves that you had. Now, where we get off the track is we have bought into the story that all of us, meaning people that look like me and you, are in America as a result of being brought over here on a slave ship.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once again, let's use a little common sense. When you go back and you read the account of the so-called slave trade, which is a bunch of, but I ain't finna say it. But anyway, they will tell you, during the transatlantic journey of people coming, being taken from Africa, brought here, 200,000 people, 100,000 people, they died. So that means, common sense tells me that's 200,000 people that never showed up. Right?
Mm-hmm.
If we just do the math.
Okay.
So how do you explain over 6 million people are already here? And
okay.
Then we go into the next mistake that we make. We go into start learning something about history, and we take the account of history, which is his story, as the only account that we should be looking at. We don't look at our story. We don't look at our ancient story of what occurred here, there, and the other place. And then we make this big, giant mistake. We try to put this thing together, put the puzzle together and get understanding from divided land masses. Now, when you put the whole earth together in one land mass, in my opinion, that's where you need to start at, right there. Now, this is just my personal opinion, because if you put the continents together, they all fit together in a nice, neat little puzzle. You can see it with your own eyes. So if we begin our ancient story there, and I say our ancient story, which precedes history, our story precedes his story. Now, Dr. Williams was talking about the public baths and all this stuff in Spain and stuff. You can find an excellent detailed account of all this information written in Stanley Lane, Pool of Moors in Spain and stuff. Excellent book. Fantastic. And it gives you a detailed description of a civilized people who brought the light of civilization to a backwards people, and after these people were driven out of Spain or left Spain, then they turned around, Ferdinand and Isabella turned around and outlawed bathing and made it against the law for you to take a bath. Fantastic,
mm-hmm.
man. And then when we get to the part about all of these dukes and duchesses and the kings and the queens, and they're supposed to live in these big castles and all that. That is a lie. They lived in great big barns with a hole in the roof so smoke could get out. Stealing
mm-hmm.
and lying was perfectly legal. I read an account, I don't think it was in Stanley Lane books, Stanley Lane Poole's book. I think it was in John G. Jackson book, where if you, Brother Yoel, wash
mm-hmm.
your clothes and hang them out to dry, and you ain't paying attention, and somebody comes along and steal your clothes and walking down the street with your clothes on, there's nothing, that's perfectly legal. There's nothing for you to say and there's nothing for you to do because this was a common practice and it was all legal.
Mm-hmm.
The same type of thing goes on today in the 21st century. You and I, we can go in a store and rob that store for $15. We'll get 75 years to life. But a European can go embezzle $100 billion and get probation. I may get 16 months. I may get 2 or 3 years. Same type
mm-hmm.
of thing. This stuff comes from them. And so it's important for us to understand his story. But more importantly, we need to learn everything that we can possibly learn about our ancient story. And when you do the research on that, then, you know, a lot of junk people come at you with, it just roll off your back like water off the back of a duck. You don't have time to deal with no foolishness because you already
mm-hmm.
know the truth and already done an investigation. And leave no stone unturned, and remember, numbers don't lie. So my position is I look at the situation from a holistic standpoint. I look at it from Earth being together at one landmass, and that's where I'm going to start at. And I'm going to get the top scholars that is putting the information out there in books and stuff, and I'm going to do an investigation on that, cross-reference all the whole thing. And then I'll be able to get a clearer understanding of what's going on. Now, everybody that's walking around with a fez on and calling themselves a Moors haven't done that. They don't have the extensive research that they need to know. And I have a fez. I can put it on anytime I get ready. Do anything I want to do. But I stand to be questioned by any man, including the United States Supreme Court, including the President of the United States. You can ask me a question, I answer them. Giving people places, times, events, dates, the whole nine. So
mm-hmm.
I hope that answers your question. Do you have another question you need to answer?
Well, Professor Williams, if he heard that question,
all right, well, he's
I guess,
back now because his call dropped, so I'm going to bring him back on so he can you and him can chat. Dr. Williams, are you with us?
Sure, I forgot my question now.
Hold on. Dr. Walter Williams, area code 773, are you back with us? Okay, probably still on break. All right, what we going to do,
okay. Now,
Brother Yoel?
Now, go ahead.
Now, we're going to take
you're
a little quick break and come back, but you got something else.
Can you hear me?
All right. Yes, sir. We hear you loud and clear, Dr. Williams.
Okay, well, let me interject this while Brother Yoel get his question together. Let's go in to the narration and the scholarship of Noble Drew Ali, the Honorable Noble Drew Ali. Any subject that you study, one should know the origin of that subject as much as they can find out the information. Now, the Honorable Noble Drew Ali started the Moorish science movement in America. It's my understanding that he started in Newark, New Jersey in 1913. And it was called the Moorish science movement, and he moved that movement from Newark, New Jersey to Chicago, Illinois in 1928. In Chicago, on the north side, he set up residence there, and you, Tahaka, I sent you a news articles in there about the residence and the building that is still standing as I speak in Chicago on the north side. Remember that newspaper with the brother with the fez on?
Yes. Yes, sir, Dr. Williams. I certainly remember you gave me that.
Right. So anyway, that was part of Noble Drew Ali's his establishment over there on north side of Chicago when he came from New Jersey to Chicago. Now, he was arrested by the Chicago police. And he was taken to jail, and they beat him. The next year, from his beatings, he died in 1929. Noble Drew Ali is buried in the suburbs of Chicago, a little suburb town called Alsop, Illinois. And when you walk into that cemetery, it's called the Burrow Cemetery. When you walk into that cemetery in Alsop, Illinois, you see a big mausoleum there, standing there, and it got inscribed on that mausoleum. It's telling you that this is the burial spot where Noble Drew Ali was buried. So he's buried in Chicago at the Burrow Cemetery in Alsop, Illinois. And another thing that should interest the Moors of today and concerning Noble Drew Ali, when he got to Chicago, he changed it from the Moorish Temple to the Moorish Science Temple. And when he died, a man by the name of Fard Muhammad came in and to try to take over his group. And they rejected Fard Muhammad. They ran Fard Muhammad out of Chicago, and he fled into Detroit, and that's where he met Elijah Poole, known today as Elijah Muhammad. And the history and the story continues from there. So I just want to bring that out to the listening audience, Brother Tahaka.
Okay. Fantastic information, Dr. Williams. Brother Yoel, have you come up with the other question yet that you want to ask Dr. Williams?
Well, actually, the only going back a little bit to the question that you, and you dealt with, the question is, why were these guys aiding and assisting the European in the way in which they were, and was there some kind of bigger picture, another plan? Was that Act One setting the stage for Act Two and what they were doing? Because it seems that today, by certain standards today, we would consider them guys to be in some ways sellouts, helping these people to do what they needed to do. Had they not done that, we wouldn't have went through some of the things that we went through. And of course, you brought in the land being locked is something to look at. But a lot of people reject that, and they don't even think about that. And they don't consider that. So a lot of folks didn't think that we were not here before Columbus, in America before Columbus. Were Moors or African folk here in America before Columbus even showed up?
That's true. They were over here living among the indigenous American Indian way before Columbus discovered this hemisphere for white people. Columbus discovered America for white people because America was not lost. People were living here. The indigenous Indian was living here. The African was living here, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the Africans that came out of Spain on the ship with Columbus are the Moors. Now, they are civilized people. They don't know anything else but to bring civilizations to wherever they touch. Okay? And they did this over in this hemisphere until the idea, Brother Yoel, was this. Get rid of the Moors. Erase them. get rid of the ancient Egyptians. Erase them. They don't want the world to know what our ancestors did. They don't want the world to know that we Africans born and living in the United States of America are the descendants of those great, grand, and royal-blooded ancient Egyptian people. They don't want that because that's the only way they can keep white supremacy in bold. It's by us not knowing that. It's by keeping the world away from that fact that we are descendants of the ancient Egyptians, you see. So they also forget that over 500,000 Africans in this country during the time of slavery were free men and women. If you go to a movie called 12 Years a Slave, will tell you that. That's the proof right there, one of the proofs. So they don't want the world to know who we are, and they teach us away from ancient Egypt. That's the reason why you hear me so strongly emphasizing that we have to tell the world who we are and claim our greatness. The Europeans stole our legacy, so we had to claim our legacy back. Our legacy was given to us and left to us by the ancient Egyptians. Now, Theodore P. Ford wrote a book called God Wills the Negro. In his book, he's showing the world that the Negro and the ancient Egyptians is one and the same. Also in that book, he said that the ancient Egyptians vanished and the Negro appeared. You see? And then I tell the story about in 1996, I was asked by the Black Physician Association of Cook County Hospital to come and give a lecture at the Cook County Hospital where I was born and where my daughter was born in 1996. They called themselves the Black Physicians Association of Cook County Hospital. So anyway, I went to the Cook County Hospital. I gave the lecture in the designated area where I was to lecture in. And after the lecture was over, the doctors took me aside to give me my honorarium. So while taking the time to get my honorarium, I asked the doctors, I said, doctors, can I make a suggestion to you? Why don't you call yourself the Imhotep Physicians Association of Cook County Hospital? I said, that way you will identify and take yourselves back to ancient Egypt. They said, one of the doctors asked me, he said, how do you know that we're descendants of ancient Egyptians? I said, okay. I said, do you agree that the Great Pyramid was built by African people in Africa? He says, yes, during the time of antiquity. I said, do you agree that there was Greeks walking this earth during the time of antiquity? He says, yes. I said, do you agree that Romans, known today as Italians, were walking this earth as people during the time of antiquity? He says, yes. I said, let's go back. Today, as I speak, the Greeks are on earth today calling themselves and claiming themselves to be Greeks because of their ancestors' tie to Greece. Is that right? He says, yes. I said, the Romans today are around calling themselves Italians, giving them an identity of the existence of the Romans and as Italians today, going back to antiquity. Is that correct? He says, yes. I said, now, where are the descendants of the ancient Egyptians? You said they built the Great Pyramid. You acknowledge the existence of planet Earth. So where are the descendants? Did they vanish? And he looked at me with a bewildered look. But that's the point I want to bring over to the listening audience. Where are the descendants of the ancient Egyptians? I'm going to ask Brother Uriel there. Where are the descendants of the ancient Egyptians, Brother Uriel?
You asking me the question, I'm going to ask you. God wills the Negro. I was going to ask you, how did he come to the conclusion that it was the Egyptians disappeared and we appeared? How he come to the conclusion that we are the descendants of, in that book of the ancient Egyptians?
Because we, as a people, we look exactly like the ancient Egyptians look.
I'm sure he used more than that.
What was that now?
I'm sure he used more than that as in his research to come to that conclusion. He didn't just say it, we look like them.
No, he shows you in the book, American Negroes. And then he shows you a picture of ancient Egyptian looking just alike. Now, about let's say, 12, 13 years ago, in Chicago, in Chicago Sun-Times, in Michael Sneed's column, she put a picture of Michael Jackson, the entertainer, the singer, alongside of a statue of an ancient Egyptian statue that looked, and Michael Jackson and the statue looked exactly alike. I got your article in my possession. One day I'll bring it to the store so you can see for yourself. So,
but can we use that as scholarship? A man saying that a man showing pictures of one group of people and then a picture of another group of people and saying, oh, they look alike. Can he use that as scholarship?
All right, but let me ask you this. Do you agree that an African people built the Great Pyramid?
Oh, absolutely.
You absolutely agree to that, right?
Yes.
Where are their descendants today?
I say those descendants are up here, but all over the place they were scattered.
I ask you a poignant question: where are the descendants of ancient Egyptians?
Well, Doc, with all due respect, I'm not the expert. I'm asking the experts, not for myself, but for the people in the audience who might have that question, same thing, question pondering on their mind. Was any of us, these people already here? You mentioned the Native American, or the so-called Native American, as I call them. Is the Native American day today the same one of yesterday? It's what a lot of issue is about with respect to who is Native American and who is not a Native American. Because if you don't know or haven't encountered anybody raising that issue, they say that what you call the Native American, they on these reservations are not the original people, that they were African people.
You cannot say that about the Native American. I see him on television claiming his identity. He doesn't deny that. It's today, as I speak, 2021. Okay, wait now, just a moment. Okay? Now, the ancient Egyptians did not vanish. They got to be, the Greeks are still here, calling themselves Greeks. The Italians, the Romans are still here, calling themselves Italians. They, along with the ancient Egyptians. So where are the ancient Egyptians? They got to be somewhere. Okay? So
of course.
If you can't understand that, then it's no use to me further having a conversation about this part, because I've been over this with you many, many, many times. Now, in about 4 or 5 years ago, Life magazine came out with a picture of King Tut on the front cover, which you have a copy of it. Now, King Tut looks like the brothers and sisters that you see every day walking up and down the streets in America. Okay? You can't deny it. So they got to be somewhere. Okay? So you have to centralize your mind on settling your mind that they are over here in this hemisphere, okay? The bulk of them, okay? So the ancient Egyptian and the Negro is one and the same. So if you can't understand that, then there's nothing I can do about it.
No. It ain't a question of whether or not I can understand it. I'm asking the question for people who are listening, because I've heard, if you haven't heard it, and Chahaka, maybe you've heard it, brothers argue that issue of who is the original Native American in America. And even the Caucasian says that the original Native American was not the Native American we think about. They call them the Olmec people. They say they were the original people in this land, and those people are African. So you gotta consider those things. And like I said, I'm not asking for me. I'm asking for the people who also who might be listening, who might want to know that question, or who may not even be thinking about that question. I don't know if they are or not, but I do.
Okay. Well, Brother Yoel, let me shed a little bit more light. Because we do quite a bit of research here. I have an online library, and I have a library in my home that I deal with from time to time. And based on what I have gleaned, if you tell me that you have an archaeological find, and the person that you find, you do the reconstruction and all this stuff, and you discover it is us, and it's dating back over 200,000 years over here already, well, that tells me there's a whole lot of falsification being going on. We got a whole lot of information that's being withheld. Now, when you say to me the word Native American Indians, I have a problem with that, because if everybody have a nationality and all nationalities associated with a landmass, how are we going to have people in the land called India who call themselves Indians, and then
that's
we
right.
have people over here that's been labeled as Indians in North America? So we don't waste any time with that garbage, because that's a lie too. What is taking place is you have an entire people that has been written out of the respectable commentary of what is called his story. That's what's taking place. And then on top of that, we get all of this information coming out about Europeans here in America and the forefathers, the founding fathers, and all this stuff, and then the Vikings came in, and then all this here, and the French, and the Portuguese, and the Spanish, and all this right here. Well, all of this is being piled up on top of the foundation of the original people on this landmass who've been here for hundreds of thousands of years, and is being covered up, written out a story. They had what's his name? J.A. Rogers wrote the book Nature Knows No Color Line. Well, he went over there in Europe and was publishing his book, and everybody thought it was super fantastic, because he started giving out information about the Moors, and this great aristocracy came from the Moors, and this, that, and the other. However, when it came for him to print the book and publish it in the United States, they said, we will not publish this book in the United States until you remove the word Moor and replace it with the word Negro. So that shows you right there that there is a cover-up, and what we have to do is do the research and acknowledge our identity. When you start doing a thorough investigation on your ancient story and look at the timeline, start, don't just sit there and read the book. Get your pencil and paper out, write down dates, people, places, times, do your cross-references, do your research and stuff. a picture will emerge from you, and you will be able to see the strength of the cover-up of your identity. We have been designated as a permanent underclass to the point that if I go out in the streets and I tell my own brother that I am an Egyptian, he'll attack me. You ain't no better than me. I'm black. I'm African American. He'll try to drag you down. You don't have to worry about the Europeans. Truth still remains who you have.
So are you saying that 200,000 years, was that an African? That was your people?
Yeah, it was our people right there. Right down there, dug it up right down to South America. They dug up a nut and on over there in the land they call it Africa, but they dug it up right down here in South America. And then put it on, it's right there on YouTube for you to see.
So you said
right
the African
there.
Was the where is the Native American in America?
We are the original people on this landmass. Put the land together on one landmass. Go and look at the ancient stories about the underwater finds. You got 400-foot high pyramids down there in the Atlantic Ocean, off the coast of Bimini, off the coast of east coast of Florida. Stretch it all the way over to Cuba. All that stuff is right there for you to see. You don't waste no time with somebody else trying to validate you. Go ahead and validate yourself, but do the research about yourself, and go ahead and on and do what you got to do. The information is available. It's right out there. We're looking at it this morning. Just this morning we were looking at it. Well, European then went down there and took the crystal out of there, and then he tried to put Plato in it and all this little garbage, and somebody who don't exist to get rid of all of that. But we're the original people. The people they call in Indians, there ain't no damn Indians. They ain't come from the land called India. It's a bunch of, what they do is take anybody but you and put on top of you and give them some badge saying they're the original people. They're the anybody but you. Anybody but
so,
you.
So, Professor William, do you concur?
Well, hold on a minute. Let me bring his line back over. But before I do that, I got another caller with his hand raised. Let me let him in, then I'm opening up Dr. Williams' line. Area code 813, you're on the air. 813, you're on the air. Okay, nobody at 813. All right, let me go back and open up Dr. Williams. Dr. Williams, are you still with us?
Yes. I heard what you said. I agree with most of what you're saying. But to Brother Yoel, I'm surprised at him allowing white people to tell him about his own books and give him some history. You know darn well they're not going to tell you the truth. Now, that's number one. Number two, white people don't even know their beginning history of themselves. So how are they going to tell you about you and your ancestors and our ancestors or someone else's ancestors? They don't even know who they are. They don't know how they got here. They have no history of them, no beginning history whatsoever. Okay? So I'm surprised at you, Brother Yoel. You got a bookstore. And
first of all,
wait, let me say this. You're going to let a white...
go ahead, Yoel. What you going to say?
First of all, I asked a question. You answered it, but you say that we are the Aboriginal or the Native American here, African people. Is that correct?
All right, I'm going to bring him back in now.
And then I asked him if he concurred with what you
now.
Said.
I'm bringing him back
I
in.
I said, but most of it,
come on, Dr.
Williams. Some of it I don't. And that's
okay.
One of the things I don't. So, yes, I mean,
well,
you know.
So why be surprised at me? I'm just asking a question. I'm trying to get at who are the Aboriginal or Native American. Like he said, we know that the word Indian came from a misnomer. That's a mistake. These people are not from India, so they're not good. They shouldn't be called Indian. You know, so we know that.
Hold it, Yoel.
Hold it. Oh, wait. I didn't. You told me to hold it, and I hold it. I'm just asking a question. You say you don't agree with Yeah, you say you don't agree with some of what he said. Well, what's the part you don't agree with?
All right. Well, hold on. Let me answer that for you. Hold on a minute.
Okay.
I'm going to let him answer that for you.
You mean you
all right,
tell
Dr.
me?
Will?
Yes. You hear me?
Go ahead.
You mean to tell me, Yoel, that you're concerned about who is an indigenous or who is American? You don't even know. You won't even claim your own ancestor. So why are you worrying about somebody else's Indians and somebody else's heritage? Claim your own first. Who are you? Who are we? You're connected with a people in this country that's called black folk, Negroes, and African Americans. That's who we're connected with. But who are these black people and Negroes and Africans? Who are they? Who's the ancestor to them? Think and study with them. I'm not worried about the American indigenous Indian, okay? That's not my subject. I'm not an Indian, okay? I am an African. I come from the raw blood of the greatest people that's ever walked this earth, the people that built the greatest monument that has ever been built by man, and that's the Great Pyramid, okay? That's who my ancestors are, okay? And they are Africans. I didn't say we're Africans. They're still Africans. That's who I'm concerned about. I'm not going to worry about the American Indian. Who is the American Indian and where did he come from? I'm not interested in that. Okay? The thing that me and Chahaka is trying to do is get us back to ancient Egypt. Claim our heritage. Claim our ancestors. Okay? Because the ancient Egyptians are the ancestors of the Negro. Okay, that's very plain. So let's not get into La La Land, Brother Tahaka.
All right. Well, I'm gonna bring our brother Yoel back in, Dr. Wing. Hold on a moment.
Okay.
Okay, Brother Yoel.
I was still asking the question: what part of what you said that he don't concur with, that he don't agree with? That's all I'm asking.
Okay. You want me to answer that?
Yes.
I'm not going to tell you that. Whatever I don't agree with, Chuck, I'll tell him privately. I'm not going to tell him what I don't agree with him. That starts an argument. I'm not going to do that. Okay?
Well, you don't have a problem with getting an argument with your hell.
Well, no, I'm not.
Okay, that's
I'm
okay.
Not,
that's
I'm not
okay.
Arguing with you.
I ain't trying to start no argument. It's conversation. This is conversation. I'm asking questions. Questions. It's a talk show. So I'm asking questions that other people might be thinking. Yoel might not even be thinking what I'm thinking right, what I'm asking you right now. He already knows. But I'm asking the question for other people who may be listening who don't know.
Let me ask you this question. You already know, right?
Let me just ask this question before I answer that question. You're going to ask that question. Let me just say this. Chahaka, have you not heard many times through many people the conversation of who is the Native American in America? Have you not heard that many times?
Oh, yes, I have.
Okay, I thought so. So I have too. So I don't know if you've heard it, Professor Williams, but we've heard that argument a lot of times by people who are having these conversations, who are Moors, and they do not point to the Native American as the indigenous people of this land. So that's why I'm asking the question. So I was trying to see where you were in that argument.
Okay.
Not to start
an
argument.
I'm not concerned about the American Indian. I'm concerned about Yoel and the people that Yoel is attached to. And those people are known as the Negro and Black, and retro back to Spain, Negro and Black, it was given to the ancient Egyptian. So I'm interested in that. I'm trying to get our people back to ancient Egypt. Very simple. Okay? So whatever I differ with Brother Tahaka, I'll talk to him privately.
Well, I don't think you hurt his feelings if you disagree with him. I'm not going to do that.
Right. Maybe there's some
problem with men disagreeable with me.
maybe there's some things I'm saying that Chihuahua don't agree with. But he can tell me off the air, privately. Say, Brother Williams, I don't agree with what you said, so-and-so, so-and-so. You know? So we're not going to start an argument. So arguments don't give knowledge out.
So first of all, let me say once more time, I wouldn't start an argument, Professor Williams.
Now, I know that, okay. Brother Yorel. I know
you keep confusing me in starting one.
I'm saying the reason why I'm not answering that question of what I disagree with. I'm not going to tell you that, what I disagree with.
Okay.
Yeah.
All
so,
right, gentlemen, I'm going to go down here to our next caller and see if they're ready to answer now. The area code 813, let me bring that back in. Area code 813, you're on the air. Tell us who you are, which question, comment for our guests. 813. Last number 0927. Okay.
Mm-hmm. They fell asleep. No, there they are.
Yeah, probably did. Ladies and gentlemen, the number to dial into the broadcast is 319-527-6084. Press 1 on your phone. That'll give me the indication that you got something to say. I'll open up the phone lines, and you can get in and tell us about it. So, brothers, we're going to take a little quick break, and I will be right back. Yeah, hold on a minute. We'll be right back, okay? Hold on.
America, one of the wealthiest countries in the world. But the question is, how did it accumulate its wealth?
This is a nation founded on genocide and built on the back of slaves. All right? So we started with a racial problem. We tried to eliminate one entire race, and then we used another race to build this country actually quite quickly as a new country into a world power. This country never would have had the wealth that it had it not had slavery for a couple of hundred years.
But I say to white people, look, you didn't do it. They say, yeah, that's right. We didn't have nothing to do with slavery. Yeah, but because of slavery, when you immigrants came here, America was already built with the blood, the sweat of my ancestors. So you got what you got because your fathers gave us what they gave us.
One mistake that's often made is showing how the South, the Confederacy, acquired their wealth off of the back of our ancestors. And even then, it's reduced to just a few slave owners who saw a real benefit. No. Chattel slavery of blacks benefited the South, but just as much it benefited the North and all of America and its many European immigrants. America's economic structure was propelled by its dominant export sold throughout the world, cotton. This one crop provided over half of all U.S. export earnings. And by 1840, 60% of the world's cotton was grown, picked, and labored over for free by our ancestors. These plantation owners were raking in money, accumulating great wealth, and never having to pay one dime to their laborers. But the North was just as involved. The North developed a variety of businesses that provided services to the slave South, like textile factories, insurance companies, shippers, and cotton brokers. But it doesn't stop at the slave owner or the businesses that provided the services to the slave system. Banks. Yes, bankers on Wall Street made millions selling goods to the South, along with giving loans and creating banks to finance southern plantations, and much of the same wealth they still have today. Let me give you some examples. J.P. Morgan and Chase Bank admitted that between the years of 1831 to 1865, two of their predecessor banks, Citizens Bank and Canal Bank in Louisiana, accepted 13,000 slaves as collateral on loans that slave masters defaulted. One of the more successful banking families that built much of their wealth on the slave trade was the Brown family, more commonly known as the Brown Brothers and Harriman Company, which is the oldest and largest private investment bank. The Brown Brothers owned hundreds of slaves. This family dominated the cotton industry. They made a huge fortune by lending millions to southern planters and cotton brokers. Another portion of their wealth came by renting and the sale of slave ships they sold to slave merchants. They served as one of the most important sources of capital in foreign exchange in the U.S. economy. Wachovia Bank, recently acquired by Wells Fargo, also profited heavily off of this cruel system. Mayor Rothschild, a German banker and the founder of the Rothschild banking dynasty, which is believed to have become the wealthiest family in human history, made enormous gains by using our ancestors as collateral. The insurance industry also saw great benefits from slavery. Companies like AIG, Aetna, New York Life were the forerunners in this industry. But see, it's also very important to note that these same plantation owners and business owners would donate large sums of this wealth in order to train their children and the next generation on containing the wealth. For example, Harvard. Harvard was built due to large amounts of money given by Isaac Royo, a plantation owner in the Caribbean islands of Antigua, who made a massive fortune off of his many sugar plantations. Yale was able to build its famous library and establish its prestigious scholarship program. Princeton. By the mid-1700s, many of its students were sons of plantation owners. Brown University, named after the famous slave owner banker, the Brown Brothers. A large portion of this campus was built with slave labor. And these are just a few of the many institutions that was built with slave money. See, these men would be looked at as great businessmen, philanthropists. But in actuality, they were securing the wealth of their future by training and educating the next generation that would take over their plantations and their businesses and even become government officials responsible for creating laws, regulations, and policies that would keep blacks fighting for human rights and access to this stolen wealth for decades. For decades after slavery, blacks have fought against unequal education, which is a sure way of ensuring wealth disparities. We fought grandfather clauses to prevent us from affecting government in ways that could transfer wealth. Land grants, free land issued from the government that blacks were restricted from. The Black Code, housing restrictions, redlining and FDA guarantee loans, predatory bank lending, convict leasing, which utilized black labor but does not transfer the wealth. I wish that I could say that this wealth disparity in America was isolated only in America, but it's not.
All the wealth that was generated that helped to make Britain great, so-called, the British Empire, all of this came from enslavement and colonialism and ill-gotten gains. And it links to this modern discussion around inequality and the huge gap between the nations, not only in terms of Britain and Europe, but also the rest of the world, and in particular, Africa and the Caribbean.
The truth is, this is the same scenario across every colonized land. Today, as a people, we fight for the Confederate flags to come down.
We even fight for people to stop using the word nigger. Right. Or other forms of bigotry to not be used. But we've been duped into believing that it's absolutely foolish to continue to fight for reparations. Many of us don't recognize the direct ties between the past and the wealth that was carried into today. Our ancestors were forced to invest in this economy without ever receiving a return. Unlike Jews, reparations were never paid to slaves or their descendants to help balance out this unjustified wealth. But understand that the reason our ancestors were enslaved was not for the purpose of being able to call us a... Right. It was not even for the purpose of being able to raise a slave flag. No. All of the killing, the torturing, dehumanizing, inhumane treatment all boiled down to one reason. Wealth. It was all business. Understand that. I know that our brother Martin did.
I still have a dream.
Not that one.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check.
All right, everybody, we're back. We have a caller with his hand raised at area code 407. I'm going to open up the line. Area code 407, you're on the air. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what your question or comment for our guest, Dr. Walter Weed.
Yes, can you guys hear me?
407, I can hear you loud and clear. What's your name?
Hello, everybody. This is Oskia from Tampa, Florida. I believe Dr. Walter Williams, that you've actually passed my number along to Taharka.
Okay.
On the line? Walter Williams, can you hear me?
Well, no, I got his mic muted. All right, hold on a minute. We're going to bring him in. Dr. Williams, are you with us? Dr. Walter Williams, are you with us? Okay, he probably took a little break. What's your question, brother?
Oh, yeah, nah, you remember me, right?
I can't say that I do, man. I deal with people all over the world. I just got off the phone this morning with Guam.
you called me about a month ago out of the blue. I guess Walter Williams gave you my number to call me about an issue that I had.
Right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Okay, what's your question?
We're not going to get into that. But I really, really want to talk to Walter Williams. But anyway, I'll go ahead and just kind of build a little bit on what he was talking about. So, you know, he definitely had a lot of great information. So I definitely want to ask Walter Williams what are some sources about the Moors? Because it seems like when you research the Moors,
Hold on a minute. Dr. Williams' call just dropped. So go ahead and ask your question. As soon as he comes back in, I'll open up the phone line, but we listen to you, man. I'm going to open up our brother Yoel's line up as well. Well, go ahead. We listen, man.
Oh, yeah.
Let's call this guy.
Yeah. I definitely want to hear more, you know, about sources on the Moors, because it's such an important issue. And it seems like today when you read a lot of sources, it almost makes the Moors out to be like, I don't know, like Turks almost. So I definitely wanted to ask Walter Williams some questions about that. Have you ever, Yoel, I know you, I think, is that the brother with the bookstore?
Yeah, his line is open now.
Yeah.
Right, so Yoel, have you read, I'm sure you've heard of it, so have you read When We Ruled?
Yeah.
So what do you think about the chapter as far as more civilization? Because he didn't even talk about the Vatican, he didn't talk about Italy, he didn't talk about the Moors in anywhere really but Spain, it seemed like. So what do you think about his chapter?
Well, first of all, that was kind of where I was going. Like, to see Moors were all over the place. The question becomes, what were their role in our history? What were they doing? Were they deliberately doing it? Because some of us see them as maybe sellouts, helping the European, doing what they do, doing what they did, setting up universities in Spain. I mean, for what? Helping the Columbus to navigate here. Then we got the Moors all down in South America that we ain't even got ventured to get into yet, down in Peru. They got 8-9 scrolls down in a village down in Peru that the Catholic Church and the government suppressed that the Moors left down there during this time of the Spanish land grant. So we were all over the place as navigators.
Okay.
Like that. The question becomes, what's the bigger picture and what
Hold on, Yoel, real quick. So what language and what script would those manuscripts have been in? Or do I just have to look it up myself? Like, you can drop the reference and I'll look it up. Were they writing in Arabic or Spanish? Latin script, what were they writing in, brother?
I said
Peruvian manuscripts. What language or in what script were they using? Were they using... were they using Egyptian? Were they using Arabic? Were they using Spanish, Peruvian?
No.
What script language and using?
I would take it that they were probably using Spanish, but I don't know that. The book that I read that brought that out and brought it to my attention is a book called Celestine Prophecy. Okay? And they talk about, that book talked about the Moors down in Peru. And that they had eight, nine scrolls that left prophecies on them pertaining to what was supposedly to unfold in the coming days. So that's the book I read, the story of.
Hold on a minute. Let me bring another call in. We got another caller with his hand raised at 312. Hold on. Maybe shed a little bit more light. Air code 312, you're on the air. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment. 312.
This is Walter Williams. My phone went out.
Okay, Dr. Williams, the brother wanted to talk to you, have some questions for you. Brother, Dr. Williams is here now on a whole new number.
Hi, Dr. Walter Williams. This is Oskia from Florida, I believe.
How are you?
Yes, I'm great, sir. I believe you passed on my number. Or you or your wife passed along my number to Taharka about 5 weeks ago or so. You remember me after the last show?
Well, not again.
No.
I don't understand what you were saying.
Yes, I was saying that you or your wife passed along my number to Taharka about 5 weeks ago. Do you remember me?
No. What's your name?
My name was Oskia. I'm from Tampa, Florida. I emailed you about an issue I had after your last show. Right after your last show, I emailed you, the show from last month, I emailed you, and you passed my number along to Taharka so we could work that out, that issue out that we had. But anyway, if you don't remember, it's okay. But anyway, I just wanted to I just wanted to tell you, Dr. Walter Williams, that nobody has mentioned how important today is. Today is your birthday eve. Am I correct?
How important was it? So you're breaking up in spots on it. How important was it?
I said how important today is. Today is important day. Today is your birthday eve. Is that correct?
You said what about my birthday?
I said it's important. It's an important day because it's your birthday eve. Is that correct?
Correct. My birthday is tomorrow.
Yes, sir. Happy birthday.
You're right.
Well, happy birthday,
Steve Austin Williams.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Happy
thank
birthday,
you.
Man.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Appreciate
you.
You've changed my life for the better. And I'm a deep fan and a student of your work, and it means a lot that you have this great show, and you've taught me many things. So, and I just wanted to remind everybody that this is not the show to call in and teach Walter Williams or debate him or start arguments or anything or challenge his information. This is our platform for us to get on, ask two or three questions, and then hop off the line so somebody else can call in. So I'll go ahead and do that. So if we want to talk about Ibn al-Arabi in Moorish Spain, what language and script was he writing in?
They learned the Spanish language, and they applied an alphabet to that language by way of the sound of that language, because they used a hieratic demotic alphabet of their creation that they used in their culture. And that alphabet, the hieratic demotic, is a phonetic alphabet that you can write by sound, okay? Now, have you read any, let's say, Hispanic literature? Like when you go into a store, they say, caution, floor wet, then they give it to you in that same caution, floor wet, in Spanish.
Never seen yes, that? Sir, of course.
Okay, that's what they use.
Right. Okay, yeah, so they're using like a Latinized phonetic alphabet, essentially.
Like a what now?
A Latinized phonetic alphabet? Is that a sense? That's right. That's what we use, right? That's what we in the Spanish use. We use the Latinized Nile Valley African script, right?
Well, yeah. I'm giving you the origin of where the script come from. Don't put Latin in there.
Right.
But anyway.
Well, the Africans, when they came into contact with those illiterate savages, the Latin or Romans, Italian people, then they had to modify the Nile Valley African to fit those, you know, Roman, Italians, and Latin. So I don't want to get into debate on that. So next question. Thank you for answering that. Next question. As far as Moorish heraldry, you know, the Moorish coat of arms and blackamoor jewelry, where does that come from? Are those symbols used to pay homage to the Moors? Are those symbols that are praise, that are celebrating decapitating or killing or conquering Moorish kings? Or are they a combination of both?
Well, see, I don't know what you're referring to. I don't know. The symbols. What was that?
Have you ever seen blackamoor jewelry?
No, I haven't.
Okay, blackamoor jewelry. Yeah, these are all blackamoor jewelry and Moorish heraldry. That's where you see like those pictures of the Moors with the blindfold on and the picture of a Moor with, you know, on those symbols. It's like, you know, it's like those fancy symbols that represent European families. Even if you look up the Moorish coat of arms, Pope Benedict has a Moor. Pope Benedict, I think the 16th, he actually put a Moor on the Vatican's or the Pope's coat of arms. It's an African people that are all over European imagery and jewelry. So I was just asking you if you knew where that stuff come from, because some people, they say that those images are to pay homage to the Moors. Some people say that those images represent Moorish families that settled in different Germanic parts of Europe and different parts of Italy and Spain, as we already know it. And some people say that those pictures of those kings, those African kings with different crowns or maybe a blindfold, then there's ones with the blindfold lifted, and they all mean different things. So I was just wondering if you knew, were these African people that were conquered, did they set up little castles and many civilizations in Europe, and then they were conquered by the Slavic people and the Celtic people, and then those European people who are in power now, did they put these African heads on their Moorish heraldry to show people, look, we conquered the Moors, look, we defeat the Moors, look, we beat up the Moors, look how powerful we are. So I was just wondering if you knew anything about the Moorish symbology, these African pictures that are all over Europe. Why do they dress up in blackface in the Netherlands? So are they doing that to pay homage to us?
When are you gonna stop? You asked me a question, but you keep going on.
I just want to say,
okay. Now, let me say this to you, my brother is here. I have to look at what you're telling me. I have to look at it for myself. Okay? I have to read more on what you're talking about. Now, was this, these things that you're talking about, what year did this come about? When this,
yes, sir.
What year did it come about?
Clearly, this is in...
What year did this come about? Renaissance era.
I'm going to let him answer, Dr. Williams. Hold on. I'm going to let him answer. Go ahead. We listen.
Yes, sir. It happened in Renaissance era Europe, 15th and 16th century. It's called Moorish heraldry, and heraldry is spelled H as in hotel, E as in echo, R as in Romeo, A as in alpha, L as in Lima, D as in Delta, R as in Romeo, Y as in Yankee. Heraldry, it just means like to hold them up to high esteem, like praise. So if you look at Moorish heraldry online, you will see, go to Google Images, and you will see thousands of pictures of black people that are in all types of European art, including Moorish jewelry called Blackmoor jewelry that cost up to millions of dollars. And these are beautiful African faces embroidered in diamonds and gold crowns that are sold all over Europe. Just like the Spanish, they dress up in blackface. The Netherlands, they dress up in blackface. So I'll email you some information about it, and hopefully I can call in next show, and you can see all these wonderful, beautiful African depictions all over Europe, painted in European art that's popular even today, that's paying homage to the Moors in Europe. Okay, so hopefully you can do
all
some
right,
more research on that, brother.
Don't forget to tell them about the soccer teams and the shirts with the Moors, the pictures of the Moors on them, and the apothecaries and the drugstores and the buildings and the statues and water fountains and all that. Don't forget that.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Tahaka knows exactly what I'm talking about. All right. But my very last question to you, brother, would be, as far as the Moors, did the Moors set up caliphates in Spain?
All right. Let me open up his line so he can answer you. Hold on. All right, Dr. Williams, did you hear
what
that?
What did he say? No, what did he say? Oh, my goodness.
Okay, yes. I believe, let's see, what was my question? Oh, yes, I said yes. So when you think about Moorish Spain, I'm reading this book. It's called When We Ruled, and Robin Walker, he's talking about the Moors, and it seems like he's talking about like a lot of like stuff about caliphates. Did the Moors set up caliphates? Were they Mohammedans in the 12th and 13th century primarily in Spain, or is that just kind of like a pseudo revisionist history of the Moors? Did the Moors set up caliphates in Spain? And if they did that, was that because they were under the rule of the Turks?
Well, see, Mohammedanism didn't come about until the 14th century. Okay? That was forced on that whole region of Africa, Northeast Africa and Central Africa, by the Ottoman Turks. Taking the teachings of Ibn al-Arabi, alias Muhammad's teaching, and they enforced that teaching. That was done in the 14th century, not the 12th and 13th century, but the 14th century. It's called Mohammedanism. And the Moors were forced into the use and the practice of Mohammedanism. A lot of people think that the Moors were Muslims, practiced Islam. No, they didn't. They practiced, by way of force, Mohammedanism, okay, in the 14th century, beginning in the 14th century. That's number one. Number two, I would have to see what you're talking about for myself, okay? I hear what you're saying, and I heard where you got your information from, and but I have to look at that and analyze that information for myself and see what, using my knowledge of history, human history, then I can determine whether this is valid or not, okay? Well, it sounds like all these things was made up after the facts, at a certain period of time. See, so I got to find out what period of time that this individual was talking about in order for me to, know what's going on with what I'm reading. So that would be my answer to you.
Yes, sir, and this isn't information that's coming from one person. This is just something that you can research by yourself. You don't have to read a book. You can literally go on Google, search for Morris coat of arms or Morris heraldry, and you will see, for example, that after the Moors built the Vatican,
all right, now, hold it. Where did this information come from? Who put the information out there?
Okay, well, hold on. I had to mute Mike. Dr. Williams, he is correct. You can glean a lot of that, especially the coat of arms, from J.A. Rogers' book "Nature Knows No Color Line," and but the bulk of the images and stuff that you can see are right there on YouTube. This stuff has been out for quite a while. You can go on the internet; it's all over there. I got a friend. Right now, he's in Guam. He's a real good friend of mine. He travels all over the world, and he has brought me a lot of information back, especially about the Moors and stuff when he was stationed in Europe, because he's on the big merchant ships and stuff. And I got a chance to verify what I'd already seen on the internet based on the information that he has. He didn't give it to me. Got his storage locker, put everything in there. But anyway, the brother has showed me all over the world where the Moors have been. And as far as the Europeans are concerned in Europe, their opinion of the Moors is that they're excited, they are joyed, they are thankful and all this stuff. But when you come to America, it's a whole different ball game because of the fear of us coming into the knowledge of self and stuff of this nature. I'm going to open up a line. Again, my brother, and I'm going to open up Brother Yoel line so we go back. We got 46 minutes left. Brother Yoel, you still with us?
Yes.
Brother Yoel.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Hold on a minute. Let me open up the brother line again. Okay, y'all hold on to the background and all. Make sure you keep that down so we get a good, nice, even flow. We're doing fantastic. Brother, you back on the air. Erico 47.
Once again, this is Oskia. Thanks for allowing me to speak further. And Walter Williams, I'm not gonna belabor the point and go on and on because this isn't something that you're familiar with. But I'm just letting you know that people such as Pope Benedict, this isn't something that you can read, that you have to read one book. Okay, this is just widespread common knowledge about Moorish history, that after the Vatican was built, for example, there were different popes like Pope Benedict, and he put pictures of African heads on his coat of arms to represent his lineage, his family, his church. He literally, on his emblem, his seal, his logo for his house, his reign, his papacy, he chose to put the picture of an African face on his.
All right, stop. I got it. Stop. What year is Pope Benedict the Moor?
No, I didn't say Pope Benedict the Moor. I said Pope Benedict the 16th, sir. I think
they got Pope Benedict the Moor Wait now, just a moment now. They got Pope Benedict Moore. They got a church here in Chicago. It's called Pope Benedict the Moore. Okay? That's what they got it. That's what they call Pope Benedict the Moore. And Pope Benedict the Moore, the date goes back to 1525. And they said that Pope Benedict's parents were Moors who were slaves. That's incorrect. Okay? So what I'm saying to you, it's very dangerous to go on and get information off of Wikipedia, the Internet, and so forth and so on. So what I'm saying to you, I deal with dates and time, people, places, and events. Okay? So I don't go by what he said or rumor said. I need to look at the material myself. Then I can understand what I'm looking at and what they're saying in the material. So that's what I have to say to you, my brother, and I'm through with the conversation.
Yes, sir. I definitely understand you, and I just wanted to say I appreciate you for teaching me everything, and have a wonderful birthday tomorrow.
Thank you.
Take care, guys. Take care. Have a great day, evening.
All right, my brother. Peace, man. Thank you for calling in.
Peace.
Okay, Brother Yoel.
Yes, sir.
We got 43 minutes left. What are we going to do now?
Well.
Got another question?
Just to add a little bit to what that brother was going with. He's talking about images that they had, Professor Williams, on the different flags and stuff like that that they had throughout Europe and stuff like that of Africans, or basically we talking about Moors. And it was a way that they supposedly revered these people before them, but they hide them. They don't tell us this, and that's what J.A. Rogers brings out in his book, Nature Knows No Color Line. So they have these emblems, but they don't show them publicly, you know. And the caliphates were Islamic leaders of different areas. There were some in Russia and different other parts of whatever Moors set up as a part of their empire. They left caliphates or governments like that, with the head of that government being caliphate. Other than that, this is Yoel from Underground Bookstore in Chicago. Anybody looking for those books that they can't seem to find, they can find me at Underground Bookstore at 1727 East 87th Street in Chicago. Telephone number 773-768-8869. That's 773-768-8869. Or you can email me at theundergroundbookstore@gmail.com. Or Underground Bookstore, the number 1@gmail.com. That's about it.
Okay. Boy, that's the one I always give you, Underground Bookstore, number 1@gmail.com. Dr. Lee, you want to give us your contact information?
Yes, you can contact me at ancientegyptian@msn.com. Ancient, A-N. Cient, Egyptian, EGYPTIAN, @msn.com. If you want to converse with me by phone, put your phone number there. I'll call you back and we can talk and we'll take it from there. So that's how you can contact me. And you can purchase both of my books, The Historical Origin of Christianity, whereby I'm saying, in that book, there's never been a man that ever walked the earth in the form of any race, creature, color by the name of Jesus Christ. Never existed. The second book, called The Historical Origin of Islam, I'm saying the thesis of that book is saying there's never been a man that ever walked the earth in the form by the name of the Prophet Muhammad of Islamic tradition. Never existed. So those two books can be bought if you order it from Brother Yoel. He's one of my distributors, Underground Bookstore. Again, I'll give you his phone number. You can call him and order the books at 773-768-8869. 773-768-8869. That's Underground Bookstore. You can purchase my book there. Or if you have a African bookstore in your town or city where you live, or any type of bookstore in that town or city where you live. You can order my books through that means. And then, of course, you can order the books by way of Amazon. And you can order from Amazon. But Yoel is one of my distributors. You can order from him, like I mentioned before. So that's how you can contact me. That's how you can buy my books.
Okay, fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, tomorrow is Dr. Walter Williams' birthday. So don't hesitate to go on there and show that we can done and say happy birthday. I'm going to try to hit as many as I can. I know y'all going to wear me out. But anyway, tomorrow is the brother's birthday. Say happy birthday to Dr. Walter Williams. And I'm saying it tonight, Dr. Williams, because after 12 o'clock midnight, I'm falling out and I'm going to be snoring. But anyway,
okay.
Happy birthday to you for tomorrow, my brother. And we still got some more time, and I still got some more questions to ask you here. But, Brother Yoel, you got Nature Knows No Color Line by J.A. Rogers, and in that book, not only is there the printed word, but there is a tremendous amount of illustration where you get a chance to actually see the coat of arms that we're talking about. You see the different flags. You'll see heavily illustrated. You've done a wonderful job on that book, Dr. Williams, so you can get up to speed on that there. Now, if you've never seen it before, it's right there for you to see. You did a great job on that.
What I'm thinking about and what I'm concerned about, Brother Tahaka, is that what year are they talking about? See, I go by people, places, time, and event, and that's very important to me. Then this way I can, like the young man said, well, this happened in the 12th century. You know, well, or the 13th century. Well, see, Mohammedanism didn't come about until the 14th century. You see, so you have to know dates in order for you to understand and gauge whether what you're reading is valid or not. You see, and then you got to also question the point of what alphabet that these people use. See, I just don't take things off the top without investigating. Sometimes it's, maybe it take me a year to investigate what I'm looking for, whether it's valid or not, you see, because Europeans, they don't even know their beginning history, but they out here writing history. They don't know their beginning history at all, you see. So I don't take anything face value. I have to find out and look at what I'm reading, where did it come from, and what time are you talking about? What year are you talking about? Dates are you talking about? What name is being used? And then there's a lot of people out here doing research, supposedly, that is very questionable. You know, you take like Chancellor Williams wrote a book called The Destruction of Black Civilization. Now, he wrote that book using the chronology of ancient Egypt as it is being written today. And the chronology of ancient Egypt was created by the European from his institution. The ancient Egyptians never wrote a chronology of themselves. But I looked at Chancellor Williams' book, studied his book, and I found out what he was doing in writing that book, that he used the chronology of ancient Egypt by the Europeans, what they put out, you see? So that's misleading, see? Europeans will mislead you. And then another thing, in America, they use the Moors, those Africans who are descendants of the ancient Egyptians. Moor is a nickname given to the ancient Egyptians by the Spanish-speaking people, like I mentioned before. So now, they, in 1478, when the Spanish and Roman Inquisition came along, Ferdinand and Isabella and the Roman Catholic Church, after using our ancestors, the Moors, for 387 years to build what is over there in Spain today. And they took the Moors 34 years to build what's over there in the Vatican today. But now it was time to erase them out of history. So this is what they did. They erased them out of history, okay? And then over in this hemisphere, for 127 years from 1492 up until slavery, 1619, they used them to set up the third arm of civilization. Now, when it came time to erase them out of history over in this hemisphere, they created a new African out of the Moors. They took the Moors and other indigenous Africans that was taken out of Africa for the sole purpose of making slaves out of them. They put the Moors and these enslaved Africans under one umbrella and said, we're going to call them Negroes. So that's how they got rid of the Moors from America, by naming them Negroes. Negro and black is synonymous. So therefore, when they did that, Brother Tucker, they created a new African people, a new African people who had no history back to Africa, had no place in Africa, no land area in Africa that they could claim under the names of black, Negro, and African Americans. So the only history that is referred to the Negro and black people and African Americans is slave history. In other words, they say our history began with slavery. No, it goes back. So that's how they got rid of the Moors over in this hemisphere, by saying that they were Negroes, calling us Negroes. Okay, so therefore, when they did that, they created a new African people, a new African people without a land to identify with or a history to identify with. So they, and then what we did, with, since we are such a creative people, everywhere we go, we create. So therefore, we, with the name Negro and our invention and creation, coming from the Negro or this African who is the descendant of the ancient Egyptian, started a new civilization. And that civilization that came from the Negro is modern civilization. Modern civilization that is being used today as I speak. See? So we're the whole world is following this Negro, because of his creation of music, all forms, jazz, blues, gospel, hip-hop, the electric slide, all those different dances that we create. They had Don Cornelius on every Saturday. I don't know if he's still on, called Soul Train, to teach white people the latest dances that we were creating. He was creating so fast that they couldn't keep up, so they hired Don Cornelius on that, the Soul Train, to teach the white folks the latest dances that we were doing. So we, under the name of Negro, in this country, in this hemisphere, brought in modern civilization. You see? So we're a hell of a people. You know, so you got to be very careful what you receive from white people. There's a lot of scholars out here. I want to name that one, Chancellor Williams. I won't name the rest, who takes everything what's being put out here by Western academia as true, taking from the top without investigating it, you see? So I don't do that. I take what they say, yes, I take it in. But then I begin to look for the flaws, look for the lies that's in the information that I'm receiving from Western academia, because there's going to be a damn lie in there somewhere. There's going to be mythology in there somewhere, okay? And Western academia has never wrote anything that says that this African was a great people. Any African, not one, you can't name me one African that the European have, let's say, glorified. Not one. See, every African that he mentioned, they say, oh, he's a nice guy, but he's come from slavery. His parents were slaves. Like I was telling the young man about the Roman Catholic guy, Benedict the Moor, mm-hmm. okay, 1525. But they said, they didn't let that stay. They said that his parents were slaves, you see, and so forth and so on. So anything with an African face, European is going to put slaves to that name or to their face. See, so you got to be very, very careful, you know, what you're reading. Jay Rogers, I love the guy, but you got to be very careful of what you're reading, okay? I'm not trying to knock him. I'm just saying be careful of what you're reading. You got to be very careful what you're reading from George M. James, Chancellor William, and so forth and so on, you know. So that's what I have to say about that.
Okay, well, Dr. Williams, I have three names here, and we got plenty of time on the clock. And I see we got another caller with his hand raised, but I got three names I want you to, if you would, please, could you tell us what you think about these three authors here. One of them is Professor Amos Wilson. The next one is Asa Hilliard. And the next one is John Henrik Clark. Could you fill us in on these three?
Okay. Amos Wilson wrote a big, thick book. But you got to remember that Amos Wilson was trained by Western academia.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I saw his book, and I know who he is, but I never went inside of his book to see what he had to say. Okay? But you got to be very careful. He's been trained by Western academia, and Western academia is not going to tell you the truth. They're going to fill your head up with mythology in order for you to get your degree. In order for you to get your doctor's degree, you got to turn in your thesis based off of what they taught you. See? And if they don't agree with your thesis based on what they taught you, they'll reject you. So Amos Wilson, not knowing some of the things that he said, I'm gonna let that lay.
Okay.
Okay? Now, the second one, you said Asa Hilliard?
That's correct.
All right, Asa Hilliard. I met Asa Hilliard in 1986 at the second ASCAC conference that was held. The first one was held in 85, I believe, in California. The second one was held here in Chicago at the Inner City Studies. And that's where I met Dr. Asa Hilliard. And I talked to him. I introduced myself to him. And we had a very good conversation. We took pictures together, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that evening, he gave a lecture on the Hyksos. Well,
mm-hmm.
I repudiate the Hyksos present, because the Hyksos comes out of the chronology of ancient Egypt. The chronology of ancient Egypt was written by Western academia, not by the ancient Egyptians. The ancient Egyptians never wrote a history or a chronology of themselves. So I walked up to Asa Hilliard. I said, Asa, there's never been any Hyksos invasion of ancient Egypt. I said, would you like for me to write a position paper on that? He said, yes. I said, well, give me your address, and I'll when I get through with the paper, I'll mail it to you, and you can tell me what you think. So he gave me all the information. It took me over a month to write this paper, you know, proving my point that there was no Hyksos invading Egypt. I mailed it off to him. I waited for him to call me back, which he did not call me back. I had to eventually call him, say, Asa, did you get my paper? He said, yes. I said, what's your comment on it? He said, well, I don't know that much about the subject.
And, wait a minute. okay, go ahead.
He said he didn't know that much about the subject that I could refer to another person at the NSA studies who was a member of ASCAP, Dr. Ben Levy, Joseph Ben Levy. Well, I knew that Joseph Ben Levy didn't know anything about the Hyksos either. So he was in the same boat with Asa Hilliard. Now, and then before Asa died, at the last conference in Chicago that I saw him, he bought both of my books. And I was given a workshop there. Now, now when Asa died over there in Egypt with Jeremiah Wright's church group, see, every year Asa would come to Chicago and lecture at Trinity United Church of Christ on 95th Street. That's the same church that was pastored by Reverend Jeremiah Wright. That's the same church that Barack Obama and Michelle Obama used to attend when he was just a senator here in the state of Illinois. Okay? So now, when Asa died, Jeremiah Wright preached this eulogy. Okay? And it came, the eulogy that he preached came out in the church magazine called The Trumpet. And on the trumpet, it had double back cover had a picture of Asa Hilliard, full page picture of Asa Hilliard on the cover, on the back cover, and on the front cover had a picture of Farrakhan. Okay, that, so now I looked inside the book to read the eulogy that was the eulogy that Jeremiah Wright eulogized Asa Hilliard with. And in his eulogy, he said that he came in at the end, on the end of Asa Hilliard's, one of his lectures, and he thought that he heard Asa claim that he was not a Christian. So he said, Asa, did I hear you say that you're not a Christian? Oh, no, I'm a Christian. This is what was in this book, in the eulogy. And then it went on to say that Asa said that there was no Hyksos invasion of ancient Egypt. So he did get my message, you see? Mm-hmm. He did get my message about there was no Hyksos invading of ancient Egypt. So that's what I know about Asa Hilliard, okay? Now, what's the third person?
The next person is Dr. John Henrik Clark.
Well, I don't usually say anything about Dr. John Henrik Clark or Dr. Ben, okay? Without Dr. John Henrik Clark, Dr. Ben, Chief Anthony Diop, Walter Williams would not have a platform to stand on because they came out into the African community. They did the very best that they could to wake our people up and try to bring some type of facts and truth to them. However, they didn't go far enough as far as I'm concerned. And that doesn't mean that I, Walter Williams, think I know everything. I don't know everything. I don't know one person that knows everything that's a fool, and I'm not a fool. But Dr. Clark, I found, did not, he took things from the top. and he ran with it. Dr. Ben did the same thing, took things from the top, and he ran with it. George E.M. James did the same thing, took things from the top, and he ran with it. See? But Walter Williams come along and said, well, now, something is wrong here. You know, like, I was at a dinner in Brooklyn, New York. My wife and I was a house guest at Clemson Brown. When Clemson Brown and Renoko Rashidi brought Dr. Ivan Van Sertima to Brooklyn, New York, and gave a dinner in his honor. And I was there, along with Professor James Small, and so forth and so on. So Renoko and I, we were in the living room, and Dr. Ben was in the living room, about 8 or 10 feet away from me. And he, sitting next to him, was the widow of Dr. John Henry Clark, Sybil Williams Clark. She was there with Dr. Ben. Renoko asked me a question about Christianity, and I gave him the answer to the question. Dr. Ben blurted out, when did Christianity start? I said, Dr. Ben, it started at the close of the Council of Chalcedon. Oh, no, man, you're wrong, man. You know, I said, well, no, when did Christianity start? He said, it started with Constantine. I said, but during the time of Constantine, Dr. Ben, that was no religion, no place on planet Earth. You're talking about in the fourth century. Christ was created in the fifth century. So therefore, there was no Christianity. Oh, you're crazy, man. You're crazy. I said, well, Dr. Ben, you know, I love you. I respect you, but you're crazy too. Okay? And then I had the pleasure of lecturing with Dr. Ben in St. Louis. Prior to that, I met Dr. Ben in 2003 or something like that. Yeah, and maybe before, and in St. Louis, when Pianchi, Brother Pianchi and a brother named Kali, they brought me and Dr. Ben into St. Louis, so we shared the same platform. And Dr. Ben came to my lecture, and he brought the widow of John Henry Clark, Sylvia Williams Clark, with him, and they listened to my lecture at the Inner City Studies College. I'm sorry, not the Inner City, so the college in New York. And then they came there and they listened, and then that same evening, Clemson Brown's wife and my wife had the same birthday month, and the birthdays dates are very close to each other. So we gave our wives a birthday party and like that. So we had it catered and so forth and so on. So Dr. Ben attended that. Dr. Clark's widow attended that. Leonard Jeffries was the MC, and his wife Rosalind, they attended that event. So City College of New York, that's what I'm trying to think of. So you have to be very careful. Even go behind Walter Williams. I don't have to be right all the time, okay? But I try to be. But that doesn't mean that I don't make mistakes, or I don't consider myself right all the time. You know, like one of my students asked me, said, Walter, why is it that you got to be right all the time? I said, well, because you asked me to be your teacher. I got to be right, okay? Or at least try to be right, you know? So that's what I have to say about Dr. Clark and Dr. Ben, Sheik Ansa Diop, and so forth and so on. So you have any other people that you want me to analyze?
Yes, sir. We got some more callers with the hand raised. I'm going to open up the line at area code 314. Last four numbers is 4600. Area code 314. You're on the air. Tell us who you are. Where are you calling from?
It's Pianki.
Question to comment before I get there. Hey, Pianki, come on in, man. You want to wait?
Yeah,
on
Walter.
In,
Walter
Pianki.
You know, we lost another one, Walter. Brother Renoco.
Who was that? I know. I was on the radio. I was on the radio with Carl Nelson Thursday and with Professor James Small. And we were having a conversation about Renoco. That was the whole program. So I was on there with them this past Thursday. You know, so, yeah, I know that Renoco had passed.
We don't see a lot come
attack.
And go, ain't we?
Huh?
I say we've seen a lot of them come and go, ain't we?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be 90 Monday in a matter of hours from now.
Well, I'm glad you're making 90, because if I hadn't stopped Dr. Ben from hitting you with that cane, you probably wouldn't have made it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can, like you said, I can dig that.
But not only it's always valuable information to take care of your physical well-being and also your mental well-being as much as you possibly can. We're not going to be here forever.
Well, I'm trying to do both. My wife is taking care of my health, and I'm taking care of my health, and I keep my mind sharp and things like that, you know. So I'm glad that I have my faculties. I'm glad that I'm not on no medication. Take no medication except for the eye drops to keep my pressure down. So I do have glaucoma. And but other than that, I don't take no kind of medication. Don't want none. Will not take any. And so I'm got a good bill of health from my doctor. I have an internal medicine doctor. She monitors what's going on inside of me every 3 months and gives me a report on it. So I'm trying to stay ahead of the game. I'm trying to stay here as long as I can. You know, I'm not interested in leaving this world. But, I'm a reality is reality.
Dr. Williams will be on the 29th of this month as well. We're coming back on at the end of August, on the 29th of August, we'll be doing another broadcast. So make sure that y'all tune into that.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to let you guys get back to your program. I just want to touch bases with you. Tarka, you take care of yourself too now.
Okay, thanks so much, Bianca. It's always good to hear from you.
I just left Khalif on another call in dealing with stocks and that, so he's doing excellent. I'm really proud of him. Yeah.
Good,
all right, thank you very much.
Yeah. All right, thank you,
all
right,
brother. Okay, Dr. Williams. Now, we still got 11 minutes, and I want to ask you if you'd be kind enough to give the listening audience your version of why won't the media and the United States government corporation broadcast the truth about the Moors, the Moorish Empire, the Moors in America and stuff. What's your opinion on that, man?
First place, like I mentioned before, they erased the Moors from the Spanish Inquisition of 1478. Spanish and Roman Inquisition, the Roman Catholic Church. They don't want the world to know that these African people came over and brought civilization into Spain. They don't want and built Spain like you see it over there today. And they don't want the world to know that it was Africans of ancient Egyptian descendants under the name of Moor that came into the Vatican and built the Vatican and the second seat of Christianity. They don't want the world to know that. They want that erased. Okay, and then that's how they got rid of the Moors.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we had a little technical difficulty. I'm gonna open it back up again because we had a whole lot of screeching and screaming there for a minute. I'm going to bring it back open again, Dr. Williams. Just hold on a minute. Let me see if this is stopped. Okay, Dr. Williams, you back with me?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know what that was, but anyway, you can continue.
Yeah, well, see, they wanted to erase the Moors out of history because the Moors and the ancient Egyptians are one and the same. Mm-hmm. You can't separate the two. See, all you got to do is follow the history line that I gave on this program tonight. So they want them erased out of history. Once they use the Moors over in this hemisphere to set up a third civilization, how do you get rid of the Moors again? It's by cutting off their history, cutting off the ancient Egyptian history. Do not mention anything about these Africans, where they came from, what land they came out of, or past history concerning these Africans. It started with erase them in 1619.
Yeah, another caller with his hand raised now.
Okay.
All right, hold on 1 second. Area code 323. You are on the air. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from, what's your question or comment for our guest, Dr. Walter Williams. Area code 323. You're live. Let's go.
Hi. Mary Sam.
Hey.
From Los Angeles, California. I'm calling
Terry. Who is this?
Mary.
Oh, Mary Sanders. Hey.
Yeah. I didn't
my
really
dear friend.
My last name, but it came out so fast because that's what you told me. I'm calling just to first give condolences to the Ronoka Rashidi's family in their in his
same
passing.
Here.
I knew him personally. Back in the early 2000s, he had a illnesses that we gave him a benefit concert, and you know, just kind of helped him out along his way. And he lectured a lot at the spiritual center that I went to, Crash Unity. So I first like to say he's going to be greatly missed. He did a lot of great work going through, well, I think it was like 187 countries that he went to, and
yeah,
finding us in all those different places. So just to honor him. And as far as Walter is concerned, his message is really kind of logically driven, so to speak, since we do know that we've been lied to and, you know, bamboozled and everything else. His information with the dates, times, and places really does lend logic for me. And I would tend to think that others who have listened to him would see and appreciate the same sentiment. And the last thing I have to say is, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Walter Williams.
Hey.
May 90 serve you as it has served you all these 90 years in a very wonderful way. Thank you so much, and thank you to Harker for having Walter on as often as you have. And just remember that you're here to lend his information and his research. And for me, it's logic.
Model
okay. Yeah, who cares, Sister Mary? Thank you so much, my dear. I appreciate everything that you stand for. I appreciate everything that you said, every word that you spoke. And I thank you, thank you, thank you. I am very humble by your words. Beyond Hotel.
Beyond Hotel. Ashe.
Ashe, sister. All right, Dr. Williams, we're running down to the last 5 minutes. And do you have anything else that you want to lay on the people tonight before you move into your birthday circle tomorrow?
Well, like I said before, they tried to get rid of the Moors out of Spain and the Vatican, in which they erased their tried to erase their presence. They couldn't do it physically because their presence mm-hmm. is still there. But all you have to do is know the history as I narrated it tonight over this program. Okay? So that's what they're trying to get rid of. And they, to get rid of the Moors over in this hemisphere, they labeled the Moors and the other indigenous human beings that they brought from Africa over here to be made into slaves, put them all under one umbrella and labeled them Negroes to get rid of the Moors. And they cut their history off from that point. And they started and created a new Negro, okay, a new African who has no land identity, who has no heritage, who has no history or anything like that. They did that on purpose because that's the way they can keep white supremacy in vogue. A brother asked my wife, another one day, he said, why did white people put our people into slavery? And the answer came back to him from her. She said, because we are descendants of ancient Egyptians. That's the reason why. See, because Europeans do not know or have a beginning history. Okay? They've been on the scene of human history for 2,353 years. That's it. Prior to that, they know no history of themselves as a European. The reason why they don't know any history of themselves, because they haven't done anything. The only thing that the European has contributed to civilization and civilized people, they contributed lies, deceit, murder, injustice, corruption, greed, terrorism, militarism, sexism, racism, slavery, exploitation, evilness, hypocrisy, genocide, drugs, death, disease, war, bombs, guns, bullets, violence, plunder, rape, white supremacy, white superiority, religion, mythology, and perverted scholarship. That's all they contribute. Everything I mentioned there was negative, nothing positive. You see? So our ancestors have been trying to civilize this European for 2,353 years and without being successful at doing it. As you see, he's still an inferior, uncivilized, spiritually dead savage. And I'm not saying that out of hatred. I'm saying that out of facts. That's facts are stronger than arguments, more profound than reasoning, more dependable than opinions. Silences dispute, supersedes prediction, and facts always end the argument. So like I said before, you got to be very, very careful of what Europeans write in these books. You got to question them. You got to study it. You got to match dates, and names, and things with the knowledge that you have inside of you, if you have that knowledge. You cannot take this, what Europeans said, from the top, because he's a liar. Brother Tarka?
Okay, well, Dr. Williams, we have come to the close of the broadcast, and it has been a fantastic show. And as far as the listening audience is concerned, y'all could send Dr. Williams a happy birthday at ancientegyptian@msn.com. And tomorrow is his birthday. And Dr. Williams, I want to say thank you so much for the enlightenment that you have given us over the years and tonight as well. And look forward to the other broadcast. I'm going to be right along with you trying to do as much as I can for as long as I can do it.
Okay.
So,
I wouldn't be here on this program and platform if it wasn't for Chaka Mario Bay. You created this platform. You created this show. You did this. You promote this show. And you was kind enough and generous enough to share this program with me and to bring me out on this platform every last Sunday of the month, and sometimes twice a month, to bring information to our African community. So you are the one that's responsible for this. I am just the mouthpiece. So you, Brother Taka, you have to get all the credit for doing what you have been doing and what we, you and I, have been doing for the last 6 years. This is our 6th year of you presenting me as your special guest, and I certainly appreciate that. Thank you, my brother. You are a true, true brother. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Dr. Williams. We're going to go ahead and close out the show. Ladies and gentlemen, I've been your host, Tahaka Amana Elbe. Y'all been listening to our illustrious brother, Dr. Walter Williams. Tomorrow's his birthday. So y'all say happy birthday, and y'all have a good night.
Hey, everybody, this is Tahaka again. I would like to introduce you to The Great Debate. We now have copies of The Great Debate, Dr. Walter Williams Debates Prince Ezio Ben Israel of the Hebrew Israelites. Also, Reverend Henry Hardy of one of the most prominent churches in Chicago, Illinois. Chester Blair, a major attorney in Chicago. And Munir Muhammad of the Nation of Islam. The whole thing is hosted by W.L. Lillard. Dr. Walter Williams debate these men on their belief versus what he knows for a fact and he can prove. Get your copy by going to www.tahakadebtelimination.org. That's tahakadebtelimination.org, or you can go to newdebtelimination.com. newdebtelimination.com. Contact me for your copies. Okay? The Great Debate. You got any questions, just give me a shout. Peace.
Here. Between 1956 and 1971, the FBI ran a counterintelligence program named COINTELPRO that was initiated by J. Edgar Hoover. COINTELPRO mainly targeted civil rights leaders such as Martin Luther King, and it's commonly understood that this was an abuse of its surveillance power in a manner to suppress a peaceful movement. So I would like to ask, Mr. Chair, unanimous consent to enter this report into the record, which is black identity extremists likely motivated to target law enforcement officers. I believe earlier you said you were not familiar with the report. Is that correct?
Well, I haven't read it. I know some of the alleged targeting of officers by
certain groups. Okay, so I would
group.
Like to know, and I'll ask you about that in a minute. So you are somewhat familiar with it. Who had the power in your department to order a report like this?
I'm not sure how that report got ordered. I don't believe I explicitly approved it or directed it.
Okay, so you haven't necessarily read the report, but you are familiar with the term black identity extremists?
Well, I think so, yes.
So can you tell me what that term means to you? Do you believe that there is a movement of African Americans that identify themselves as black identity extremists, and what does that movement do?
Well, it'd be interesting to see the conclusions of that report. But I'm aware that there are groups that do have an extraordinary commitment to their racial identity, and some have transformed themselves even into violent activists.
Are you aware of white organizations that do this as well? Given that white supremacy is well-documented, well-researched movements such as the neo-Nazis, the Ku Klux Klan, et cetera, are they white identity extremists?
I didn't follow that question, please, again.
Is there a term or a report on white identity extremists? You mentioned you were familiar with black people who identify with their racial identity.
Yes, but it's not coming to me at this moment.
Not coming to you?
It's
certainly a group such as the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah, and then the skinhead movements, but there's a racial identity, white movements that have been identified for sure.
So has the FBI done a report on white identity extremists that are likely motivated to target law enforcement officers? Is there
I'm not aware of that.
Okay. Are you aware of a group called the Sovereign Citizens?
I've heard that group, yes.
And I believe that the Sovereign Citizens is primarily a white organization that absolutely has targeted police officers and killed police officers. You're not aware of that?
I'm not aware of all their crimes, but I know they're a group that's known to have violent tendencies.
Could you name an African-American organization that have committed violent acts against police officers? Could you name one today? In this report, they name organizations from 30, 40 years ago, but can you name of one today that has targeted police officers in a violent manner?
I believe I could, but I would want to be to confirm that and submit it to you in writing. But I believe we had, within the last year or so, four police officers killed by a group that some have described as extremist.
So what has happened is that there have been a couple of incidents in which African Americans did kill police officers who were not associated with a black organization. And so one, for example, in Baton Rouge was associated with Sovereign Citizens, which is primarily a white group. So you should know that there's a lot of concern in the community, especially from organizations such as Black Lives Matter. By the way, would you consider Black Lives Matter a black identity extremist group?
I'm not able to comment on that. I have not so declared it.
So you should know that a lot of activists around the country are very concerned that we're getting ready to repeat a very sad chapter of our history, where people who are rightfully protesting what they consider to be an injustice in their community, which is their relationship with police officers, are now being targeted and labeled as extremists and are going through periods of surveillance and harassment. And so I would like to know, what is your department going to do to protect the rights of average citizens to protest if they have a concern about police officers?
This department will not unlawfully target people.
So if that's the case, then I would ask that you review this report, Black Identity Extremists Likely Motivated to Target Law Enforcement Officers, because I personally don't believe that any such organizations exist. The organizations that are referred to in this report are organizations from decades ago. And so I would like to know, what will you do to essentially roll back what is listed in this report? Because it's not accurate. Sir?
We will look at the report. I actually would be interested in reading it. But they usually do an excellent job, objective and fair, on those kind of reports.
Okay, well,
time of the gentlewoman has expired. The-